The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Hello world, 695 qualifiers played, 125 to go, and here's what we've got today after Moldova rolled over for England. What awaits in Kiev? Can Ricky Lambert go from beat crops to beating Ukraine? Elsewhere, stricken Strachan, Ronaldo brilliance, the Belgians, drama in the CONCACAF, Africa, news from Belarus, the Simonich tackle, the Peppa Pig tattoo, and a world first in international football from San Marino. All of that, plus we remember about the Football League, posts and tweets in Football Weekly. Yes, hello everybody. That beeping and bubbling isn't from tank-based super synapse entity Jonathan Wilson.
Morning.
Who's fresh from his Lithuanian personal trainer.
I am.
Wee.
Apparently I don't breathe properly. That's a revelation of this morning.
Yeah.
I've been doing it wrong for 37 and a bit years, and I'm slightly scared of putting it right, because it seems to have worked.
All right, what should you be doing?
Apparently my breathing's very chest-based. It needs to be more abdominal-based.
Oh, I think, yeah. But you're a yogan.
I've just started doing yoga.
Yeah, I think one of the first things I'll get to is the breathing, surely. Yeah. Using a diaphragm.
Apparently it's causing a curvature of the spine, and if I get my breathing better, I'll be able to retract my belly button more. And
there you go.
That'll straighten the spine.
Bingo. Jonathan is joining us, as you gathered. Barry Glendinning.
Hello.
Hey. You're still fired up over that crazy game in Ireland, Sweden.
Fired up wouldn't probably be the term I'd use.
Right.
Slightly depressed.
Right, okay. And Mr. Mello over there on the sofa, John Ashton.
Hi.
Hi. Today's John is brought to us by which letter, John? The letter...
A through I.
Really? That's all?
Mm.
Okay. Good. England. That's in there, isn't it? E for England. 4-0 against Moldova. Who'd have thought we'd be sat here bemoaning the absence of Danny Welbeck, but cheering on the international career of Ricky Lambert, you know, for ahead of a big game for England. Who'd have thought, John?
Who would have thought, yeah. It was good. He played well, old Ricky, didn't he?
Mm. 2 goals and 2 assists in just 94 minutes of action for England. Who's got stats like that? No one.
Well, I do wonder that if we're in kind of Peter Crouch sort of territory, in that England, what happened with Crouch, he was sort of brought in as a plan B, forced his way to become plan A because of his performances, and then sort of being a big man, he fitted, worked with the rest of the England, or the way that England have to sort of play, and then gradually just fell out of fashion. And I wonder if the same fate awaits Ricky Lambert somewhere along the line. But for the moment, he's doing really well.
Mm. I'm not sure that's a problem, though. I mean, I think there's a danger in international football of looking too long-term, that actually it's almost impossible to put in place a long-term plan because you have injuries, you have withdrawals all the time. So, I mean, yeah, you've got to balance it, obviously, but I don't have a problem with picking players in form, knowing they're probably not going to play more than 10 or 15 games. And actually, that's something Italy, I think, do very well. They don't have a problem picking a player in form from lower down the league in the knowledge he's not a world beater, but he can do a job for the next 2 months, 3 months.
Toldro Skelacic
would be a fine example.
There you go. Bingo. Well, it all means with Poland holding Montenegro to that surprising 1-1 draw, England are top of the group, but facing now this tough match away to Ukraine. Here's a stat for you. San Marino and Moldova are the only two teams that England have beaten in these qualifying matches. Isn't that a bit of a worry?
I think it should be, yeah. Mm. Particularly as they've got to play
teams
that aren't those two teams in the last 3 games.
Right.
What does that actually mean, though, in real terms? It means they drew games in Montenegro and Poland.
That's very much what it means, yeah.
It's not the worst thing in the world.
Well, if you have to beat those teams and you haven't managed to beat them previously...
But you win your home games, draw your away games, you're fine. I mean,
it sounds less dramatic that way.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It does. I'm sorry.
No,
crisis. We're doomed.
Well, Jonathan.
The positive thing is that draw means... England would really have to mess up in a big way not to at least get a playoff spot.
Ah, well, that's true. But the playoff teams, there's some tasty-looking outfits in the potential playoff spots.
And France almost certainly will not be seeded. So England probably would be seeded. So France would be a potential danger there.
Right. Russia or Portugal could be in there. Sweden, Croatia. We'll come on to those other sides. But let's talk a little bit about Ukraine. They're coming off a huge win, 9-0, against San Marino. Although... if it's against San Marino, you probably can't read too much into it. Is it a false nine? In
fact? 9-0, 6-0, 12-0, doesn't matter against San Marino. But it is significant in that it does cut away England's advantage of goal difference, which now stands at just 7, which you think should be enough, but Ukraine have to play San Marino again.
Ah.
So England racked up 13 in 2 games against San Marino. Ukraine have got 9. England have done better against Moldova than Ukraine did, but it's certainly possible Ukraine could go to San Marino and score 8, 9, and could eat into that goal difference. Right, which may prove significant.
Ukraine is suddenly looking at the team with momentum, as I think you yourself were saying. 4 games now under Mikhail Fomenko. 15 goals scored, none conceded. Is that right?
One conceded. Yeah, conceded against Poland.
Oh, all right then. Still, pretty good
stats. Oh, no, they've done brilliantly.
So what's the difference?
I think there's 2 things. I think, A, he's not a lunatic like Blocking. Blocking, I think... it must be very difficult if you've been a great player and you've been praised to the rooftops, as he was, quite rightly, as a player. And as a coach, he just seems to be utterly autocratic, refuses to listen to any dissenting opinion, slightly old-fashioned football, very crabby and negative. I don't think got the best out of Ukraine at 2012. You know, those 2 Shevchenko headers against Sweden sort of cast that campaign in a flattering light for them, which actually I think was a really disappointing campaign for Ukraine. Fomenko, in many ways, quite a similar background. He's a Lobanovsky player. He spent 5 years working with Lobanovsky at Dynamo Kiev in the early 80s. But he just seems much more progressive, much more forward-looking.
Mm.
They press very high up the pitch, but the two wingers, Konoplyanka and Yarmolenko, drop back in to form a 4-man midfield if necessary. I think they're a very well-structured team. But he's also seems to have got them believing again. And he, you know, in the 1992 Cricket World Cup, Imran Khan had his famous cornered tigers speech, where he said, yeah, Pakistan on the verge of going out, and he said, we have to fight like cornered tigers, and this kind of inspires Pakistan. I think he basically did exactly the same before they played Poland, and they went charging out, knowing they had to win to stay alive, and scored twice in the first 7 minutes.
Every game's a cup final.
Would be the football cliche.
Yeah, okay, good. Yeah. And they're mad, of course. Here's the other thing, that they're mad about what happened last time they faced England in Kiev, no?
Yeah,
or was it in Donetsk? I think it might be.
It was in
Donetsk,
yeah, but I think unreasonably. I mean, there was the Marko David shot that crossed the line before Terry cleared it, but he was offside, so. You know, there's 2.
They're not mad about that then?
Well, no, I think they are. That's something they should be.
Yeah.
I don't think they're mad. I think they're just mildly disgruntled. So, I mean, Blocking certainly was mad about it, but that's part of the problem, that he focused on the negative and became very paranoid.
I think it was Konoplyanka, to whom Jonathan alluded earlier, was saying that the result against San Marino, despite being great, was not ideal preparation for facing England, because he said it was just too easy, and you know, he has to go from facing a full back who was basically, well, he said it diplomatically, but useless, to facing someone who's much harder to get past. So, you know, that may be a point.
It's also, of the 9 goals, 4 came from his corners.
Yeah.
Now, is that because Ukraine are really dangerous from corners, or is it because Samuel can't defend corners? And it's really hard to know which is the case there. I mean, I think, yeah, he clearly can take a good corner, but whether it's that good, I don't know.
Mm. Well, also mildly disgruntled after Friday's events was because Roy Hodgson, who's lost to Danny Welbeck in very unfortunate circumstances. And given the other problems that England's forwards face, that means that who's going to be up front, do you think, Tom?
Well, we were sort of talking about this a little bit in the office this morning and wondering if Hodgson would have started with both Welbeck and Lambert anyway, given his sort of predilection for picking James Milner for the big games. I find it astonishing that he hasn't called somebody else up on the back of Welbeck being banned. I mean, just to give him an option on the bench.
He's and not Defoe, hasn't he? So it's not.
Yeah, I mean,
totally then, or you could play Walcott through the middle.
You could play Walcott up there, yeah. But I mean, if you know Lambert gets injured in the first 10 minutes, I mean, it's not inconceivable that you know England are stuck with a one proper striker up front chasing the game with you know 20 minutes to go.
Well,
you know,
who would be the player to call up?
Well, I made myself a list yesterday when I was thinking about it, and they were
Andy Carroll.
My 5 names.
He's injured.
Of the people that are fit, you've got Gabby Agbonlahor.
He was excellent against Arsenal, really excellent.
And was clearly
pretty
up
good
for it yesterday.
Louis Tomlinson as well. As we have you seen that? I don't know.
Yeah. I didn't know who Louis Tomlinson was. It had to be explained to me. But
right. Good. I was confused about Gabriel Agbonlahor myself. But anyway,
when Jimbo was telling me the story this morning, he said Agbonlahor had clattered into Ricky Tomlinson.
Yeah.
So I have this image of an overweight Scouser in a string vest with a beard.
When we went onto YouTube, I was so disappointed.
Yeah. Our finger really is on the pulse, the pop pulse, isn't it?
So you had Gabby up on the hall.
Yep.
Fraser Campbell, won a cap in 2012. Gary Hooper. Mm-hmm. Of Norwich, who was watched by Hodgson earlier this year. And then people like Crouch and Bent. I mean,
but he didn't call up any of these people.
No, he didn't do any. And so, I just wonder if he might have done just to have the option. And we might talk about it later, but Chris Coleman was talking about the psychological impact of just having somebody on the bench, even if you're not going to play them.
Yeah, Wales ambassador Gareth Bale, who doesn't actually include playing in his activities anymore, but just makes PAs before the game.
If he remembers his passport, he's doing better than his manager.
Yeah, absolutely. So he didn't bring anybody along. Now, Barry was saying that England shouldn't panic, and Jonathan as well was reacting with some irony to the notion that it was any kind of crisis for England. But
it's a serious threat. They might not top the group.
Yeah.
The playoff could throw up something pretty nasty.
Mm.
But my point is more that kind of you do draw the odd away game. If it's a team in a league game or something, you sort of move on and go on with it. The problem is international football, you have a month to dwell on it.
Yeah.
And everybody's expecting them still to kind of... Yeah, Ukraine and Poland and Montenegro are decent teams. You can't expect to go and blitz them in their place.
All right. Well, what do you think is going to happen to England then this time on Tuesday?
I think a very dour 0-0 draw, I'd be quite happy with it.
A dull draw, and that's a good result for England, essentially.
It's not a bad result for Ukraine. Mm. If you think of where Ukraine were after three games, they had 2 points after three games, they would have taken the playoff then, no question.
Interesting.
We do have a wonderful possibility that 40 years on from the Tomaszewski game at Wembley, England could play Poland in a decisive qualifier. And so anybody who'd interviewed Tomaszewski, for instance, would be able to sell that many times.
Yeah. I'm just astonished we've managed to talk about Ukraine for this long without Jonathan mentioning Lobanovsky or Cybermetrics.
But he did mention Lobanovsky earlier.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did I? I did.
They were both proteges of Lobanovsky.
Bugger.
Yeah. I mean, everybody is, basically.
Well, 95.23% of Ukraine independent nation has been coached by either Lobanovsky or somebody who played for him or worked with him.
Good to have that figure to hand. Nice. A little bit of music, and then we'll move on to other exciting World Cup qualifying news. Anyway, now moving along, Ireland... Did you take the lead? You took the lead, didn't you? You had the lead.
Yeah,
first half hour was good.
Took a first half lead through Robbie Keane, and
what happened?
Sweden
then?
Were. It's probably an exaggeration to say they were on the ropes, but they were looking very, very brittle at the back. And rather than press home their advantage and go for a second goal, Ireland sort of sat back and tried to defend their lead, and there was only going to be one outcome after that, really.
Is your manager Trapattoni?
He is, yes. So it's not a huge surprise that happened.
Right. Ibra
was probably the difference between the two sides, I'd say. Sweden are pretty average. Ireland are pretty average. Maybe flattering to say they're only average, but it was disappointing in that I thought it was a match Ireland should definitely have drawn and could have won, but instead they've lost now, and which means their chances of qualifying in second place are hanging by a thread.
Well, you need to win away at Austria on Tuesday.
Is Robbie Keane's 60th goal, is that right?
Don't know.
I think there's only four players, European players, who scored more national goals than him.
Wow.
And it's a ludicrous list to put Robbie Keane in.
Miroslav Klose, he'll be in.
Klose is one. Gerd Müller is one. Yeah. Pushkas is one, and Sander Kocsis is one.
Oh, there you go.
And Robbie Keane, an obvious fifth wheel on that card.
I would imagine he has played a lot more games than the other four.
Well, he's not as good, let's put it that way.
Yes.
Well, poor old Robbie Keane. Eh? Anyway, so Germany top of the group, 5 points clear of Sweden. Sweden in the playoff spot at the moment, and 3 points behind them are both Austria and Ireland. So it is quite a crunch match, that one in Vienna.
Yeah, and not one I would be particularly confident of them winning either.
Right, Trapattoni, presumably that's it, is it? This game is his last, is it?
Well, he has said that he'll probably go when his contract expires in the summer. I think the clamour in Ireland for him to go is getting louder and more enthusiastic. And Martin O'Neill is being touted as his possible replacement. So, you know, I quite like Trapp, but Ireland are playing caveman football and they're they're better than that. They're better. I don't expect them to be world beaters, but they should be better than they are.
Right.
There's a all serious danger as well, that group, that they won't actually be one of the best eight runners-up.
Yeah, true.
They're the third worst at the moment.
I mean, not everyone who finishes second. One second-place finisher is going to miss out.
But Norway are the ones in danger at the moment, but they've got a game in hand. Actually, not over Sweden, but they have a game in hand over Bulgaria, who's second bottom.
I was just going to say, wouldn't a group that includes Germany and Sweden... Ireland going close to qualifying, which is probably, they look like they're going to go fairly close. Yeah, isn't that par? You wouldn't necessarily expect them to get out of that group.
I don't think Sweden are any great shakes, to be honest. I mean, they have touch of class in Zlatan that Ireland don't have, but apart from that, I'd say the two sides are fairly evenly matched. Although their equalising goal was a brilliant goal. Header from Elmander, who got in front of Richard Dunn to get in the end of a lovely, lovely cross.
Mm. Very good. Let's talk about Scotland, who apparently are currently running the risk of being statistically the worst qualifying Scotland team ever. They are lying bottom of their group. They've scored a grand total of 4 goals. They haven't managed to win a single game at home. They have just 5 points. They were beaten 2-0 at home by Belgium on Friday. Belgium very much on top of the group. Gordon Strachan afterwards saying it was heavyweight v flyweight. They have everything: speed, height, strength. Everyone really buzzing about the Belgians at the moment. We decided to get a little bit more info from local expert Michael Jongsma of top Dutch stroke, low country stroke, Belgian, etc. website benefit.net. Michael, thanks for joining us. First up, this Belgian team. Woof, the pace. The pace, was that just what happens when you play Scotland, or are they really worth the hype?
Well, they are a very talented bunch. I mean, it's the golden generation for the Belgians. When you look at the past few years, there are so many talented footballers in this side, and most of them aren't even at their peak yet. So it's really remarkable to see how they've grown from actually a pretty mediocre side into possibly, not contenders for this World Cup or perhaps even the European Championships, but it's definitely, a side that can, box up against any national team at the moment.
What are they contenders for, do you think, then, Michael?
Well, I think in two or 4 years, they could be, or 3 or 5, perhaps, they could be... They could be one of the best sides in Europe. I mean, they have everything there. Defense is as solid as they come. They do struggle a bit with the fullbacks because they don't have traditional fullbacks. It's more a center back that can fulfill that role with Vertonghen on the left and Alderweireld on the right. But defensively, it's very solid. The midfield has a lot of energy with... this Friday it was the standard Liège trio of Vold with the 4 Fellaini and Witzel. And in attack, I mean, Benteke has been remarkably good for Aston Villa ever since he joined the Premier League, and they still have Lukaku on the bench as well. So it's a very strong and solid side, and they aren't as exciting as one could imagine they can become. When they really fulfill their promise, but it's a very good side to watch. The only point is they haven't really been tested yet, so that will be the big question. When they would really face a team with genuine quality, how will they cope with that?
Mikael, is it just a coincidence that so many good players have come through at the same time, or is it down to some super coaching infrastructure that of the kind England are hoping to get going in the next few years before they win the World Cup in 2022?
Well, it's just a very talented generation, actually, and they have made some changes in their youth setup. They are more focused on retaining the ball and more taking the initiative themselves, and that really helped the development of the squad. But when you look at the individual players, a lot of them have been schooled in other countries, with Hazard moving to Lille, and quite some Belgians coming through the Dutch setup, actually, with Vermaelen, Vertonghen, Alderweireld. school at Ajax before when they were taken away from Germinal Beerschot. And there are numerous examples, actually, of players that as teenagers moved abroad. So I think it's mainly a very talented generation. And the youth setup in Belgium is very good at the moment because Anderlecht has been incredibly well in the with their youth teams as well at the moment. And there are some genuine talents coming through there at the moment as well. Genk has produced some fine talents in Courtois and Jellefossen, who is still there, a little striker. I think it's more of a very good generation that's coming through, being nurtured very well, then it's actually something that you can expect from the Belgians in a structural sense. This probably won't last for the next few decades, but their setup has improved, and well, with the talents that they have at their disposal at the moment, it's all coming together very nicely.
Certainly is. What's the mood like in Belgium? Are they going World Cup crazy?
Yeah, they actually are. I mean, they're feeling really confident about qualifying for the World Cup, and rightly so. I mean, they've got a 5-point gap with Croatia, and with two games to go, one of them away in Croatia and the other at home against Wales, they should be able to qualify. And they really feel more Belgian than ever, it seems, when you look in the media. And they're really there's a real fever going on. One national newspaper even quoted that Brazil was turning into a new national anthem because the supporters were singing it so loud after they beat the Scots.
What were they singing in Holland? Meanwhile, after that shock result, so nearly losing that last minute equaliser.
Well, they were quite grumpy, actually, and the general mood is more that, well, maybe we're not so talented and so good as we once thought we were, and 2-2 draw, even only resolved in injury time, because Van Persie got quite an easy penalty to salvage point for the Dutch. The mood is that Louis van Gaal isn't looking too sure as a coach at the moment. The defense is young, talented, but really unsure as well. And the general consensus is that the first 15 minutes against Estonia were actually really good, but they opened the score through Arjen Robben. But after the 1-1, it just completely collapsed. And the Dutch aren't feeling confident at all, and they regard Belgium as a better team at the moment. So that's kind of a new thing for the Dutch, and the mood is, well, quite a bit tense, actually. Quite some critics have been quite harsh on the Dutch. Johan Cruyff said today in his column in the Telegraaf that it's maybe a good result for the Dutch because this way we are aware that we're actually not as good as we think.
Right, and coming from a big fan of Van Gaal like Johan Cruyff, that's surprising.
Yeah.
Who's up next for Holland?
The next game is against Andorra,
right,
who have never scored against the Dutch ever.
Right.
So that shouldn't be too much of a problem.
And they only need 4 points from the last 9 available, so it's still looking pretty much in the bag.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's going to be a problem at all, but the Dutch team even had a practice without any media because they wanted to keep their game plan a bit more secret than usual for the game against Andorra, which is quite stupid, actually. I mean, nobody sees Andorra as a real threat for the Dutch, of course. But
there's no easy games in international football, Michael.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, right, yeah, well, we've seen that the last Friday. So.
Well, absolutely. Listen, best of luck with that then, and look forward to catching up with you soon.
Cheers, thanks.
Thank you, Michael Jongsma there of Benefoot.net, your source for all the latest on the incredibly exciting Belgian national side, and Belgian and kind of Low Countries football. Football from that part.
The words Belgian and incredibly exciting don't often feature in the same sentence.
I'm not sure that's true, is it? Surely there are other areas.
Aren't they renowned for Belgium? Isn't Belgium renowned sort of for being a very boring place?
Great food in Brussels. That's one of the usual cliches about
Belgian.
And Bruges, is, Bruges gets Bruges, good press.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
But the original title for the sitcom Drop the Dead Donkey
right.
was Dead Belgians Don't Count.
Is that so?
Apparently, yeah.
My great-great-grandfather was a Belgian.
There you go.
I rest my case.
And how did he come to...
He was a wool merchant in Antwerp, and when the bottom fell out the wool market in the late 19th century, he saw Sunderland as economically the more logical place to be.
Right, okay. What was happening in Sunderland at that point?
A lot of mining and shipbuilding.
Okay.
Generally cool. vibrant place, as it is today.
He got on his bike, although probably not, given the North Sea.
It's Pedalo, yeah.
Yeah. Right, okay.
What was his surname, Jonathan?
Have I told you the story before?
No.
We don't know what his surname was, but he decided he wanted to fit in. So he picked the closest word in the dictionary to it. But because he thought the van sounded aristocratic, he wanted to keep that. So he was known as Van Ham. So my grandmother's maiden name was Vera Van Ham.
What a story, eh? And there's many more where that came from. Barry.
You kind of have to be worried about the state of the home nations at the moment. I mean, England are the only ones who are in the top half of their group, which is quite a worrying stat.
Mm. Mm. I think there's something slightly strange about Scottish football at the minute. I mean, they did win in Croatia, which is an astonishing result. And Johnny Northcroft from the Sunday Times was saying yesterday that there's actually a weird mood of positivity about Scottish football, that there is a sense that they've hit the bottom and they are moving in the right direction, that there's at least a sort of defensive resolve about them again. And yeah, losing at home to Belgium is not the...
I didn't Belgium see that really game, good. So I don't know if they were any good or not.
But they're in quite a lot of danger of slipping, because they were the fourth seeds in this group, and they're in quite a lot of danger of slipping down into the fifth pot for
have to watch their
Euro qualifying. Yeah,
yeah. All right. And well, the Belgians look amazing. Jonathan, are you still hot for them?
Yeah, I saw them away in Belgrade last year, and they were excellent that day. I mean, in a what could have been a very hostile environment, but I think they won 3-0.
Mm.
Benteke was excellent. De Bruyne was excellent. I mean,
even the ones
really
that don't play in the Premier League look really good as well.
That's amazing, isn't it? It's almost like another world out there.
Yeah.
But I mean, what's extraordinary, I mean, I think you often see with sort of so-called golden generations that they have a core of sort of half a dozen players and the rest aren't really as good. But they seem to have about 15 really good players.
Absolutely. You mentioned Belgrade, which presumably was the venue for the Serbia-Croatia game, was it, on Friday?
Yep.
And what a tackle by Simovic. Posh.
And, yeah, he really did clatter that bloke and then had the audacity to look very hard done by when the referee produced the red card. Simovic famously being the guy who was booked three times by Graham Poole.
In fairness, he could have got three yellows
didn't
for that
get
tackle.
Sent off. Yeah, I was going to say he deserved at least three yellows for that, if not four or five.
Yeah,
well worth looking up on YouTube if you haven't seen it.
Absolutely. You mentioned the parlous state of home nations and, you know, close-lying islands. Football at the moment. Northern Ireland, who looked for a brief while as though they might be on for another famous home result, hosting Portugal, who are in the midst of a bitter scrap with Russia for the lead in their group. Portuguese going 2-1 down at Northern Ireland, Windsor Park, in a game which saw three red cards, but also three goals from Cristiano Ronaldo, who looked a bit ace.
Yeah, and the home fans were winding him up by singing that he was just a cheap Gareth Bale, and he exacted a rather brutal retribution for this outrageous snub. Mm. I didn't see the game, so...
I caught highlights and heard that he'd now overtaken Eusebio as Portugal's top international scorer. There you go. Now, Portugal are on 17 points, Russia on 15, Israel...
But Russia have a game in hand.
Ooh, Russia have a game
But they
hand.
Have they have chucked away a great position. They're losing in Lisbon cost them, but the big thing cost them was losing in Belfast last month.
Hmm.
The game should have been played back in March and was snowed off. I think if they had played in March and had a bit more momentum, they might have been more likely to win that game, but... They still, if they win their remaining three games, say Russia go through at Portugal's expense, and the remaining three games are Israel at home, away to Azerbaijan, away to Luxembourg. So it's far from impossible.
Fantastic. Whizzing through the rest of the qualifying groups. Ooh, Italy looking good for their place in Brazil. They had a 1-0 win in Palermo against Bulgaria. Thanks for that. Go to the goal scorer Alberto Gilardino, who's enjoying a little bit of a rebirth. He's got a bit more positivity back into his life, apparently, at the age of 31. He's also uniquely got a tattoo on his left bicep of, Barry?
Peppa Pig.
Yep.
I thought you had a tattoo of Barry there. So
that would be almost as surprising, but yes, 31-year-old allergic to Argentina with
quite sinister.
Peppa Pig.
Why?
Nobody knows. The article I read suggested it might be something to do with his three daughters, all of whom have names beginning with G. I like that. So, Giladino. There's Julia Giladino, and I can't remember the others. Anyway, but as much as his goal won them the game, so did the saves of. And people were having a little bit of a pop at Buffon in the Confederations Cup, saying he's too old, he's past it. He looked absolutely amazing. I'm not sure if you've caught these, but if you're a fan of good goalkeeping, check out Buffon's saves against Bulgaria. They are, well, in English parlance, Gordon Banks-esque.
Before we leave Group B, though,
yeah,
we should say well done to Armenia, shouldn't we? Whose last two results are away wins in Denmark and away wins in the Czech Republic, and could actually sneak into the playoffs.
Despite losing to Malta, which is ridiculous.
yeah, that's right. They're the coming... They and San Marino.
The coming teams.
The coming teams. San Marino, because, and I forgot to check who it was against, but their under-21 team won.
Oh, they beat Wales.
Was it Wales?
Yeah. In a the Welsh weekend was so shambolic that their under-21s even lost to San Marino.
That's the first ever recorded victory by any level of San Marino team in any international competition or in qualifying match official fixture.
I didn't realise that.
Did the Wales under-21 manager bring his passport?
I believe so, yeah. Mm-hmm. Geraint Williams.
He might not be needing it in future.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, France, though, Barry. France.
Oh, the French.
The French. That's enough on that, then. Serbia, Croatia, we've done that.
Big collect. My ACCA, my international ACCA. I picked out 9 teams, 8 winners, and the French let me down.
Just can't score goals, can they?
0-0 away in Georgia. According to Julien Laurent, France was simply pathetic. Georgia even hit the post, and Giroud missed a massive chance right at the end. Well, you know what? That's enough about Europe.
Bosnia?
It's not enough about Europe. Bosnia?
Bosnia slipping up, losing 1-0 at home to Slovakia, letting Greece back in, which is really, really, really annoying. Not because I'm anti-Greece, but just because Bosnia they're not going to have a great team for long.
Right.
Make the most of it.
Yeah.
And they've lost in playoffs to Portugal the last 2 tournaments, and they're going to go into a playoff again, and they're going to lose to Portugal again.
In CONCACAF football... 2 big results. Don't know if you saw this. Mexico lost at home at the Azteca to Honduras.
Only their second home defeat in qualifiers ever.
There you go. They fired their manager wisely straight afterwards and now brought in the man who took them to Olympic gold in London last year. Whose name is, Jonathan? Luis...
I don't know.
I can't remember his second name.
Luis Fernando Tena.
Tena, that's right. And now he must win their next fixture, which is...
Against the United States.
In Columbus, Ohio. The same United States team that's reeling from a 3-1 defeat away to Costa Rica. The Costa Ricans got their revenge for the snow game. The taxis and everything, the immigration queue, it all worked a treat, as did the fact that the US were without Michael Bradley, whose absence proved a major problem for them.
I think the presence of Jürgen Klinsmann's a major problem for them.
But they've been doing well of late until this game. Well, they had a 15-game
qualifying. Woohoo.
Yeah.
Right then. They're a point behind Costa Rica, second place.
Yeah, and everybody gets in from this group, so there's not all that.
Well, Mexico are in grave danger of not getting in. They're in fourth place.
They're in grave danger of having a playoff with New Zealand.
Yeah.
Well, no, they could actually.
No, that's what happens. If you finish fourth. Oh, I see. If Panama,
Panama could pass them, and Mexico could fail to qualify for the first time since 1998.
Wow.
And. Even if they do go into
the
qualifier against New Zealand, don't forget New Zealand were the only team that didn't lose in the last World Cup.
Wow. 2012.
I'm strafing you with my stat gun.
You are. Give us some sexed up South America, Barry.
Luis Suarez showed Liverpool fans that he hasn't lost his touch. Right. They'll have been monitoring that one with interest. He took a dive to win a penalty from which Uruguay scored against Peru, and then he took a dive to get the Peruvian fullback sent off, and Uruguay went on to beat 10-man Peru 2-1. So
where are they now?
Sort of tightened their grip on fifth place in South American qualifying, and
which will take them to a playoff with Jordan or Uzbekistan, who had a 1-1 draw.
Yeah.
But I think they might.
They could still pass Ecuador.
And Ecuador obviously have the horrible situation of Chicho Benitez having died. Yeah. And so, you can't really blame them if their focus isn't quite there.
Mm. Top of the group, Argentina?
Yeah, Colombia in second place, Chile third, Ecuador fourth. So, yeah, it's probably almost certainly going to be Argentina, Colombia, Chile, and Ecuador or Uruguay for the fourth and fifth places.
Jonathan, big weekend in Africa. Where are we now?
We've finished the group stage. So the next step is on September the 16th.
There's anybody in or out definitively this time?
Yeah, Ethiopia, Cape Verde, Cote d'Ivoire, Ghana, Burkina Faso, Nigeria, Egypt, Algeria, Cameroon and Senegal all go through. So the big shock over the weekend was Tunisia going out. They lost 2-0 at home to Cape Verde.
Mm.
Cape Verde, of course, who, I mean, actually were very impressive at the Cup of Nations.
The Blue Sharks.
The Blue Sharks. And their manager, Lucio Antunes, is a part-time manager, part-time air traffic controller.
No way.
Yep. So I'd love to think he stands on the touchline with kind of ping-pong bats kind of directing his defence, but that's not what he does.
They have those little headsets.
But they were an absolute joy in South Africa at the Cup of Nations. They were just so kind of...
Pushing tin.
Yeah, a disappointing film, I felt.
But they also have some of the great names in football. I mean, they've got a goalkeeper called Fock, which is just funny. I mean, we'll pretend it isn't, but it is. But they've got a whole load of players named after great players of the past.
Really?
Well, and the present. They've got a David Silva, they've got a Platini. They've even got a Kay, who I'd love to believe is named after John Kay, but I suspect not. And they also have the defender Nivaldo Tax.
Tax?
Yeah, Tax, who plays for Teplice in Czech Republic.
Oh, they're my new...
But they're bizarrely seeded. They'll be seeded. Oh, and the forward, Gary Rodriguez.
There you go. I have to say, you've got to love Cape Verde,
but I don't know.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Anyway, them. Because they're the 172nd largest country in the world, or smallest. I mean, that's how small they are. They're only 100. In terms of size, they are 172nd, and yet they're still there.
And so the way the draw works, it was going to be in Cairo, then they said, because of the political situation, they're Marrakesh, and they were talking about moving it back to Cairo. So the draw will be somewhere in North Africa.
Right.
And the five seeds are Cote d'Ivoire, Ghana, Algeria, Nigeria, and Cape Verde. So you could... I mean, Egypt are very, very good. Egypt is the only team with 100% record in qualifying anywhere in the world.
Mm.
So they'll be really difficult for anybody to play. Cameroon, or was there was some suggestion Sammy Leiter might have retired again last night.
I can ask him, because I'm interviewing him this afternoon.
In his alter ego of?
Super Sam, I think. He's releasing a comic book.
Of course.
So I'm going to interview him in a swanky London hotel.
Oh.
And I think I'm... So by the time people are listening to this, I will hopefully have interviewed him, or I'll still be waiting interview him, because footballers are always late with these things.
Okay, Samuel Eto'o, by night known as Super Sam, and it'll be interesting to get an update on that. Let's now close up what's been a bumper part two, but some very intriguing stuff coming up after this. A bit late for this segue, but Samuel Eto'o, he used to play for Angie Macachula, didn't he? Isn't that what?
Yes.
You're laughing at my pronunciation. Anyway, he used to play for Angie them, and he doesn't anymore, much like other top players. What's going on there, Jonathan? And what's it got to do with the price of potash?
Everything.
Ah.
Literally everything.
Literally?
Yeah.
Okay. What is potash?
I've got no idea, actually. It's to do with fertiliser, but...
Oh, okay. On you go.
Is it something to do with potassium?
Maybe. Why is the price of potash bringing about the destruction of a Dagestanian dream?
Angie's owner, Suleiman Karimov, owns one of the world's largest potash companies, maybe the biggest. I'm not really au fait with potash. And he had a deal with the Belarusian government, which effectively operated as a cartel to keep the price of potash high.
Mm.
For some reason, which still has never been made clear, his company pulled out of that deal, which meant that the price of potash will fall, which hopefully should mean cheaper food for everybody, because obviously fertilizer is cheaper, food's cheaper.
Mm.
But so that's the upside of this news. The downside is his company, the value of the shares dropped dramatically when they lost this sort of guaranteed money through the Belarusians. And that seems to be the major factor in him deciding he can't afford to run a football team in the same way as he had been. So
right.
He's sold off all the talent, and he's now focusing on younger stars.
Okay, he lost 325 million or something.
Yeah, the value of the shares dropped by that, and then bounced back. So it's not that he's actually lost all of that.
All right, so Willian and Eto'o went to Chelsea.
Denisov went to Dinamo.
Chris Samba as well.
Yeah.
Where did Samba go?
Dinamo, I think.
Moscow.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm. Right, and they sacked the manager as well, René
Müllerstein, who was there for just 16 days.
Ah.
And why was he sacked? Because they kind of
just because they can't afford him.
Right.
I mean, there'd been a suggestion that Eto'o didn't like him, and kind of Eto'o had been there'd been training ground arguments involving Eto and Denisov. Denisov, who's a right chippy little irritant.
Interesting. All of particular interest to Spurs fans because they're in their group in the Europa League. There you go.
Spurs are the group from hell, logistics-wise, because they have to go to Moscow, the border between Moldova and Ukraine, and the North Pole, basically.
The North Pole?
Yeah.
Tromso.
Ah, good. How far is that from the North Pole?
I don't know.
It's north of the Arctic Circle. I don't know if you remember, Chelsea played there in, I think, 97, in a game in the snow, and for a long time it didn't change the ball, so you couldn't see the ball. So it looks very bizarre on YouTube, kind of. The Arlene awesome. People kind of flailing around.
Well, the game hopefully will be in the midst of winter.
Hopefully, yeah. Nice Thursday night in November. Very entertaining.
Good stuff. Now, to finish off, John, the Championship, League 1 and League 2. What's been going on there so far this season?
Well, let's ignore the Championship because I didn't play this weekend.
Well, yeah.
So let's just move straight up.
Paul Ince is Blackpool topping the league with 13 points for 5 games, blah, 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 blah. Although QPR, they're up there as well with Joe Barton as well.
Yep. And in League One, which is the stuff they've actually, you know, paid any attention to. At all.
Your own club, Sheffield United, have a new sugar daddy, don't they?
Yep. Yeah, we've got a Saudi prince. Although he's not one of the...
petrodollars ahoy.
He's not one of the big money Saudi princes, unfortunately. He owns a paper company.
There are a lot of Saudi princes. This one's got a paper company.
Yeah. I sort of imagine him as the Saudi Arabian David Brent. he's just a chilled out entertainer who's managing a football club. He's bought a 50% share in Sheffield United for £1. Essentially absorbing all the debt.
£2 would have bought the entire thing. Why didn't
he just... he didn't want to stretch to that. He's that hard up. But he's you know making the right noises and promising Premier League football in 5 years. Although they lost away at Rotherham at the weekend, so that gives you an idea of the size of the task. And because there's money involved, the tabloids were linking the name of Senghor and Eriksen to Bramall Lane over the weekend, predictably enough. But they've had a slow start to the season.
I read today that the Saudi prince had promised David Weir, the Sheffield United manager, £20 million to buy players in the sort of loan window, which is still open till October, I think, or mid-October, and Weir said he didn't want it.
Oh, really? I didn't see that. I think you'd struggle to find people to take the money off your hands at League One level.
You could go to Dagenham, get some
potash.
Yeah. Potash is any of various mined and manufactured salts that contain potassium in water-soluble form. The name derives from pot ash, which refers to plant ashes soaked in water in a pot, the primary means of manufacturing the product before the industrial era. The word potassium is derived from potash.
All right, I thought it was the other way around.
Yeah, Barry.
Potassium was first derived by electrolysis of caustic potash in 1808.
Yeah. Okay, then. Matt, now that was very exciting. How about poor old Coventry?
Yeah, well, they had their lowest ever home attendance in their 94-year history of 1,789. Of course, they're playing in Northampton at the moment because of a dispute over rent payments at the Ricoh Arena in Coventry. So the fans are organising a boycott of the home games. And, yeah, so far it's working.
Do they still go to the away games?
I think so. I think that people are turning out for away games.
And when you say it's working, in what way?
Well, it's working in that it's keeping the numbers down. Sisu, the company that owns the club, has said, well, we'll just keep funding these losses for as long as it takes. And they're sort of saying there's no plan, essentially, to move back to the Ricoh Arena.
That's the worry, yeah.
But they want to build a new stadium instead, which they've said will take 3 to 5 years, I think, which seems optimistic in itself. So, you know, there's a chance that Coventry could be playing in Sixfields for... You know, up until sort of 2020, I guess, in that sort of time period, you'd imagine at some point, something will happen to sort it all out. But at the moment, it's a right old mess. Although they've started the season really well, they had a 10-point deduction. They've already wiped that out, and they're off the bottom.
They are indeed.
What's happening to the Ricoh Arena then? Is it just empty, or are they using it for other stuff?
Well, it's got lots of conference facilities and that type of thing. So
you know, they have rock gigs there as well.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know if it's paying its way at the moment or not, to be honest. All right, but that's nothing, you know, because it's separate from the club. You know, it's not the...
Yeah, but just as to whether there could be some kind of short-term reconciliation to at least get get Coventry somewhere to play in Coventry and get Rico Arena a little bit of cash.
Yeah, I don't know to be honest, but I think there's no current plan to even negotiate going back to Coventry.
All right, well, pinching our noses and swallowing to ease the pressure as we descend even further down now to League Two. Yikes, Portsmouth.
Yeah, the interesting news at Portsmouth over the weekend was that the local paper down there, Portsmouth News, have got hold of the figures, the exact figures that they owe all their previous players. Obviously, they've been in financial turmoil over the past 4 or 5 years as they tumbled through the leagues. And these figures are absolutely astonishing. So, for example, Tal Ben-Haim, they still owe £1.6 million to and are paying him £20,000 a month.
Dave Kitson's the kicker,
for
though.
3 years. Dave Kitson, £11,000 a month for the next three and a bit years. Hayden Mullins, for the next 2.5 years, they're paying him £21,500 a month. And all these fees, and that's the tip of the iceberg. There's tons and tons more players who are all getting, you know, four. There's a whole
raft. £110,000 a month, apparently, that the Portsmouth Supporters Trust or the club now have to find just to meet these players.
Just to service ex players, yeah, which just shows you the sort of financial straitjacket that they're in.
How can they do that in League Two?
I'm not entirely sure how they're doing it, to be honest. I guess if you can sort of cut your cloth, and I guess it's £30,000 a week, isn't it? So these are monthly payments. So it's like having a £30,000 a week player on your wages as a League Two club. Yeah, I mean, I can only assume that they're. The wages they're paying, their current playing staff, are pretty minimal.
Mm.
But yeah, it makes it a very difficult situation. And these aren't just, you know, they're not going to go away over the next 6 months. These are all kind of 3 and 4 year payment plans.
Are there any managers in those figures?
I said, look, no, there's no names mentioned. There's no you know, leaning out of car window payments that for any ex-managers that are being owed. So maybe he got his money. When he was there.
Oh, that's...
Because this is the thing that they didn't... Because they're in administration.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like it's kind of... It feels a little bit harsh on the players to have published these stats. I mean, whether it's harsh to sort of... You know, they're probably quite happy enough. But, you know, it's not necessarily the players' fault. These are probably contracts that were agreed with the players, and then they weren't paid during the period that they were in administration, so they do owe their money. And the players have waived some of their... cash that they're owed. They've PFA have
waived it in a Sunderland
deal.
In a nightclub sense, or
waived in the other sense. Yeah, okay. Yeah, there's a deal brokered with the PFA. So although these figures are high, they could be even worse.
All right. Well, where are they in the
stage? They've had a poor start. They're in the bottom half, and they think they drew 2-2 with Cheltenham at the weekend, the last minute equaliser.
Oh, they're up to 17th. There you go. Well, that's it for today's Football Weekly. Many thanks to Jonathan Barry and John for joining us, and you at home, and producer Ben and Mikhail Jongsma too. We'll be back on Thursday with all the reaction to the extraordinary events that are awaiting us around the world on Tuesday night, and look forward to the return of league football, etc. and so on. Have a super week. Speak to you then.